Jean. Oh, are you not ready to go? Oh, Steve, okay.
Today.
Good. Let's do that. Open the work session on 2300. Gene, why don't you come forward?
Left out.
We'll let him catch up. Why don't you and Brian tell us, in the meantime, what we're looking at today?
Mr. Chair, Gene Thorne, Governor's Education Workforce Policy Advisor, and with me is Brian Reeder of the Department of Education, who, if it gets to technical stuff, you can call on Brian. You should have Dash 2 amendments in front of you. We were here about 3 months ago now, and there were a number of issues that came up at that hearing. Then as we looked more closely at the bill, also had some others. As you may remember, this is now growth about Measure 1, and Measure 1 requires that the legislature establish equalization grants for our property poor school districts. And with the eligibility and the amount of the grants to be set by the legislature. And so this is proposed as implementing legislation for that portion of Measure 1. The primary concept behind this is to array school districts based on their property wealth. And for lower property wealth school districts that do pass a local option, they would receive a state grant that would take them up to, in essence, the 75th percentile, wouldn't take them all the way to the top, but as an incentive for property poor school districts that would have to have a higher rate. Some of the changes that were made since that hearing, originally we were using assessed value for ADM instead of ADMW, and felt that ADMW better reflected the burden that school districts face. And so are using that now, which also compresses somewhat the range between the top and the bottom school districts. There's also a question about, as you know, the language is lower of the gap amount, 10% of the grant, ADMW grant, or $500 per student. And although most districts now are in the gap, over time it is thought that the $500 per student will be what would be the lowest. And so the language in the past had actually set the state grant outside the $500. That was not the intent for lower property wealth districts to actually be able to raise more. And so a grant would be within the $500 per student. Lastly, one of the issues that we had tried to deal with in the budget, and this isn't a governor's budget, because there are school districts that have passed local options, and then there may be others who might pass it during the interim, becoming effective during the interim, and we didn't know who was out there potentially who might. We had left a cushion of money, in essence, in the governor's budget. What we've done for these amendments is say, if you pass a local option during the interim, effective during the interim, and you would qualify, you still qualify, you would have to under the constitutional amendment, but you would not actually be paid for that year until the following biennium. So what that does is bring certainty to the budgeting process. So at this point, then we know at this point in the session now which districts would qualify. Any that would come in during the interim that would qualify would be paid in the 2003-2005 biennium retroactively. What that does do then is take the fiscal from a $5 million down to under $1 million. And so we have talked to Ways and Means about that as the state school fund was presented. Those are the larger, I think, policy issues. I don't know if either Steve or Brian, if there are technical issues. They spent a fair amount of time on some of the technical issues of making this more workable.
Other questions for either Mr. Orner or Christine? I had told both Gene and Ways and Means folks that I was, if the committee sees fit, I'm willing to move this on to Ways and Means. Measure 1 last November does create at least an obligation to establish a vehicle to do this, and I think that's what 2300 does. Whether it's the perfect vehicle, I don't know, but it's the one we've got, and Ways and Means was ready to receive it and work on it there. So unless the committee is disinclined, my inclination would be to move this to Ways and Means. Any discussion before I move that? Okay, then in that case, the chair will move House Bill 2300 the floor with a due pass recommendation with subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
With dash two.
I'm sorry, back up. Withdraw that motion. I move the dash two amendments into House Bill 2300. Is there any discussion on those? Any objection? All right. Thank you very much. Now, the chair will move House Bill 2300 as amended to the floor with a due pass and with subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there a discussion on that, Representative Beck?
Well, I'm a little puzzled. Is this with a due pass or to the floor Ways and Means without recommendation?
I put a due pass in the motion.
Okay. I'm going to vote no and not make it stink about it, but I'm not ready to sign off on all this.
Anybody else planning on voting no?
Mr. Chair?
Mm-hmm.
I might feel more comfortable with that recommendation.
Really? Okay, that's
fine.
I don't know really enough
about the details of it.
Okay. Then let me amend my own motion, if the committee will indulge. And I will amend the motion to send it to Ways and Means without to the floor without recommendation, and that it be subsequently referred to Ways and Means. Okay? All right. Then please, that's the motion? June? As amended, yeah. Mm-hmm. Then you look puzzled. To the floor without recommendation with subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
To the floor as amended without recommendation?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay? Got it. Okay, please call the roll.
Representative
Bay. Aye.
Representative
Staff.
Some
enthusiasm.
Yeah.
You won't even do it
without recommendation.
Yeah, I like it.
That was an aye. Go on.
Wait, no.
Aye.
Aye.
William.
Aye.
Leah.
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson.
Aye.
Safari.
Aye.
Representative Beck. Oh, I'm sorry. Aye. Representative Beck, before I bang the gavel, do you want to...
I'll vote aye.
Okay. Goes to the Ways and Means Committee.
Ooh, that was tough.
Thank you very much. Let's go to House Bill 3187. We'll open a public hearing on that. Do we have anybody signed up? I have seen this before.
Can we come to my compromise? Okay.
Committee on
Water and
Energy.
I'll have an answer. It's real. This one is moving pointer.
I probably looking here that day. 418. What did we do?
And you?
Okay. Dick, do you want to bring us back up to speed on this?
3187. Deals with allocating essential private activity bonds. What we have is a situation where the federal government allows a certain amount for each state of private activity bonds to be federally tax exempt. And then what the state of Oregon does is to sort of allocate among all of the competing uses of those private activity bonds the tax-exempt allotment. And so what this does is to add an area of eligibility for that tax-exempt allocation, which is called waste and recycling collection. And that's all the bill does.
Okay. Mike Dewey, Doug Goh, and Tamara?
Yeah.
Thank you. Townsend.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Mike Dewey, representing Waste Management, Inc. Doug Goh, Ader Wynn, and Tamara Townsend with Cable Houston Benedict. You have amendments to House Bill 3187 that we have prepared. Let me say that we have been attempting to communicate as best as we can with parties, economic development, Treasurer's Office, housing, and you will hear from some of those parties regarding this legislation. Mr. Chair, I thought it might be first appropriate to have Mr. Goh explain, hopefully fairly briefly, again, how the program really works at the ground level and how these perhaps interests compete with each other or don't compete with each other in terms of the various allocations from economic development and the private activity fund itself. And then Ms. Townsend would describe to you the amendments and what we're attempting to do with the amendments. So, Mr. Goh.
Mr. Chair, Doug Goh with Ader Wynn, Bond Counsel. The first, just as a brief reminder to the committee, why are we here? Why is this of interest to private parties? Tax-exempt interest, low interest rates. Federal government has said private activity, what they call private activity bonds, if you meet certain public purposes, are able to, will give you tax-exempt interest rates. And solid waste disposal facility is one of those categories. What, as Ms. Townsend will address, what the amendments do are really just to clarify existing law. And let me try to address kind of what the existing framework is. Since the 1970s, Oregon counties have been able to issue private activity bonds for what are called pollution control facilities. And as a subset of that are solid waste disposal facilities. So counties can issue pollution control bonds for private parties and have done so for many, many years. Secondly, and again, those are issued on a basis where the county does not provide its own credit, is only involved in the transaction to create the tax exemption. The sole credit in the transaction is the credit of the private party who is benefiting from the tax-exempt interest rate. The State Economic and Community Development Commission historically has been the statewide issuer of conduit revenue bonds, or what are called industrial development bonds. Their primary focus has been on manufacturing facilities. For state law purposes, for federal tax purposes, you can be a solid waste disposal facility and also be a manufacturing facility. Let me, if I may, just give an example. The Newburgh paper mill gets retooled to be able to dispose of waste paper. That is a solid waste disposal facility, but is also its manufacturing newsprint, albeit manufacturing for state law, for federal purposes, solid waste disposal. What the bill seeks to do is to say to economic development, for solid waste disposal facilities which are not manufacturing, in this case for landfills, for transfer stations, that is an eligible criteria for which bonds can be issued by the statewide issuer of conduit revenue bonds, the Economic and Community Development Commission. The third thing, as was pointed out, in terms of private activity bonds generally, unless you fit within an exception, require volume cap to be tax exempt. We all recognize volume cap is a very precious commodity. There's always more demand than there is supply. One of the provisions of the bill that Ms. Townsend will address allows the state to preserve that volume cap, but still do solid waste disposal facilities. And it takes advantage of a provision of the federal tax code that says if a government owns, for quote, federal tax purposes, a facility, it can lease that facility to a private party on a long-term basis, and that project does not require volume cap to be tax exempt. Arguably, the current statute, both in the county statute and in the state statute, provide that. But frankly, the language is, while the language is there, it was not intended for that purpose. We are seeking a technical amendment to make that clear so we can preserve the volume cap. You have, in terms of the, let me just briefly address the allocation system, if I may. The legislature has, each year in the so-called bond bill, as you know, allocates to each state agency who has the authority to issue bonds, both the authority to issue a certain amount and type of bonds each year, as well as for those agencies who have private activity bond authority, they get certain allocations. Economic development is one of those that has an allocation. Oregon Housing has an allocation. For local issuers, all local issuers must go to what's called the Private Activity Bond Committee to seek volume cap. In this case, if the bill goes through, for those projects that require volume cap, we would go to the Economic and Community Development Commission and be in a position to compete with other projects and obtain that volume cap. Be happy to address any questions and turn it over to Ms. Townsend to address the details of the amendments.
Sounds to me like a good bill for the consent calendar.
I know, Mr. Chair, right after lunch, talking about the federal tax code is the insured place look, so you're kind to indulge a bond lawyer.
Any questions for Mr. Goh?
Mr. Chair.
Sure, we were listening. Representative Hass.
When you, thank you. When you say that you this will allow you to compete, I'm just, if you could be sort of, you might have to boil this down, but could you be a little more clear on how the citizens of Oregon benefit by the passage of this law?
Let me address that, and I'll, my colleagues to my left, Mr. Chair, Representative Hass. The benefit to the citizens of Oregon are to provide for more efficient and cost-effective solid waste disposal services, access to landfills, recycling of projects so materials don't end up in landfills, but to the extent that they do end up in landfills, that the rates are as low as possible. Because, again, because of the lower interest rates, the private companies involved can pass those costs on to the consumer.
So you're saying, Mr. Chair, that, I mean, obviously this helps your company, or else you wouldn't be here, but are you saying that because this may provide a savings for you, then that will in turn be passed on as a savings to your customers?
Maybe, Tamara, do you want to address that? Since
Tamara Townsend with Cable Houston. We represent Waste Management, be one of the corporations that could take advantage of this bill. As Mr. Goh indicated, if the company is able to lower their transaction costs with this tax-exempt financing, it's able to lower their operating costs, which immediately... It does have an effect on the rates and the contracts that it charges municipalities for solid waste disposal. The other thing this bill does is we currently have the ability to go county by county to do these tax bond issuances, and this will allow us to save on some of the transaction costs by having a single statewide issuer for projects in various counties.
I might. Just go a step further, Mr. Chair, Representative. The waste management, the landfill disposal business is a very competitive business. And we compete very hard with a landfill, a very significant landfill across the river, literally almost from the landfill, the Arlington landfill. And what if we can utilize these programs, that's in the best interest, obviously, the private company, but we think in the best interest of Oregonians in terms of being able to lower, we have lower operating costs, we can compete better, more economically. And we haven't talked, and I think Tamara will talk about vehicles in a few minutes on the leaseback program, which is, we think, essential for this bill. And those vehicles would, she's going to get into the cost of the vehicles, and we had that discussion, but vehicles that otherwise we might not be able to buy.
I appreciate that, but there's nothing, maybe I'm wrong, but there's nothing in this bill, though, that says if Waste Management saves money, that that in turn will be passed on and lower rates to municipalities or anyone else.
Well, let me try and do that, Representative Shetterly and Representative. Yeah, I understand that. I think it recognizing the business that Waste Management is in, that we have every incentive to have the lowest cost possible for our customers. We want customers. Quite frankly, in the landfill business, the management tells me they lose bids on, you know, if they're 10 cents higher per ton than their competition. So there is a real incentive for us to have lower costs and to pass them on, and to pass those on, because we're not a duopoly, we're not a monopoly here. How we would put that into a piece of legislation and audit that, I think, would be very, very difficult.
I add one additional thing. This type of a conduit revenue bond financing, the corporation is working directly with either counties or a state department, like Economic Development Department, has a direct interest in how the company is using the funds and how those funds are spent. So there is some government participation and follow-up in these revenue bond expenditures.
Because we do, Representative Chair and Representative, we do have to pay back the bonds, and there is that requirement.
Ms. Townsend.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. If you indulge me, I'll go through the sections here and talk about our proposed amendments. Feel free to stop me in if you have any questions. Section 2 simply adds solid waste disposal and lease payments here, as this makes it express that those are authorized activities for conduit bond financing.
Presented before you. Question?
Can you explain to me the lease payments part?
Sure. The lease payments, as Mr. Goh indicated, part of this bill, which is outside of the volume cap context, would allow a governmental entity like Economic Development Department or a county to issue revenue bonds, purchase equipment like vehicles, and lease those vehicles or equipment to a private corporation, and then the private corporation would be responsible to pay back the bond. So this just makes it clear that the governmental entity is authorized to enter into these lease transactions, have them secured by the lease payments by a private company. Section 3, this is the... In Section 2, sub 2, we're making it express that, again, solid waste disposal facilities, vehicles, rolling stock, and equipment are authorized activities for these conduit revenues and bond financing.
Okay, Carlson.
I'm
going to
give it
a All right. Attention.
I can understand why you'd put or any solid waste disposal facility, but is not limited to. Doesn't that expand the scope of this definition even beyond what you're trying to get at here?
That's my question.
We intended this to have it be related to the solid waste disposal facilities.
Does anyone know where the "but is not limited to" language came from?
We've included that.
Pardon?
We've included that. I'm not sure that it's essential.
We do not need that language. We included it.
Mind of a
we've had
to strike that.
We have no problem with striking that now.
The essential
language. The school operation.
Instruction.
That was not our intent.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Sure. Section 4, sub 2, for these types of revenue bond financings, we have requested that the commission, if they're not a typical government type of project, they would be exempt from the findings in Chapter 285, which I can go over those the department's required to make certain findings before they approve applications for these revenue bond financings. The first finding is determining that the action is cost-effective, considering both major public expenses and major public benefits. And the way that that determination is made by the department is more focused on job creation, not job retention, and that analysis isn't necessarily applicable to a waste management type of operation. The other finding that we're requesting exemption from is that the project will produce goods or services which are sold in markets for which national or international competition exists. And again, that analysis isn't really applicable to waste disposal activities within the state.
Not being familiar with the underlying statute that's referred to there on line 22, are there other findings then that the commission is required to make? Okay.
Yes.
Let's just exempt.
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, Mr. Chair, waste management might be able to meet the national and international because they are a large international company. But for smaller waste facility companies, they may not be able to meet that, and that's why we wanted to have that in.
Very good.
I'll skip to Section 5 on page 4, line 20 through 22. This is the language that is critical for our leaseback financing program. This would allow a governmental entity to, again, own title purely for federal tax purposes for vehicles or other equipment and then lease those facilities to a private corporation. And the corporation would be responsible to make all the payments on the bonds.
Federal tax ownership, is that a term that means something in your world?
Yes. I'll give that to the bond counsel.
Mr. Chair, there is a specific provision in the volume cap provision, Section 146 of the code, and federal tax ownership is actually a general tax concept that there's a lot of case law on that basically says you got the benefits and burdens of ownership, and there are various tests. But yes, it is there's a body of law that says what that is.
Okay. Moving on to Section 6 here. Again, in the conduit revenue bond financing context, the governmental entity isn't acting in a regular context here, so we've requested that solely for this purposes that the department would not be subject to Chapter 279, which are some of the competitive bidding requirements for state projects. Moving on to Section 7, this is where the bill shifts. We start talking about counties, and this would allow a project that is located in more than one county for one county to be a sole issuer for the revenue bonds rather than, again, having multiple transactions for these revenue bonds. Moving on to sub L in Section 7. This, again, is the language that would allow the leaseback financing programs for the counties, similar to what we've requested for the commission. And, again, for the counties, on the last page here, there's an exemption from the Chapter 279 requirements of competitive bidding and so forth.
Just for the record, then, the policy, both in that section and the, I guess it all comes under Section 7. The policy considerations for exempting, in Section 6 and 7, exempting these from Chapter 279?
Because in the context of these types of activities, the government isn't purchasing them necessarily for themselves. Right. It's the private corporation that's using the tax-exempt financing. And the one program that we're considering using this, and there are others, are very specialized types of equipment for solid waste disposal activities that are pre-selected, and the company has all the incentives to select the most cost-effective equipment as possible.
Okay. We've made it through the amendment.
Yes.
Mr.
Chair, let me just follow up in terms of the leaseback arrangement. That's important for us because California has a similar program. And as we talked about in the previous hearing, that we would be able to purchase more energy-efficient vehicles. And as you might imagine, we have a lot of vehicles on the road. And those are more costly, unfortunately, but they are better for the environment. And we look at this as perhaps a kind of, we don't make any money off of it. It's a break-even, if you will. And so we can use the lower-cost money to purchase vehicles that are more expensive, so it's a break-even. But it's good for the environment, and we think it's a good public policy. I think you will hear from the housing advocates who will be concerned about the volume cap and the effect that this bill may have on the volume cap, notwithstanding they have different caps than these programs do. I think the concern is that somehow we're going to, over time, come in and usurp some of that volume cap, and that is not our intent. And even if it were our intent, I don't think we can win that battle politically in terms of housing and these kinds of projects. But with regard to the leaseback, and I'll come back to that, again, that doesn't impact the volume, the cap itself. So we can go up and over that particular one. So that isn't, should not be controversial.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
We'd like to ask the bond council what would we talked about repaying these bonds. What would happen? I mean, Waste Management had a huge financial accounting problem a year or so ago. What would happen if Waste Management defaulted on these bonds?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pass, excellent question. These bonds are structured with a irrevocable direct pay letter of credit by a national bank, highly rated bank. And so actually in terms of what payment stream, basically to isolate any bankruptcy risk of Waste Management or any other company that would take advantage of this program, basically this letter of credit is used to draw on pay bondholders. So regardless of what happens underlying, that would be between the bank who issues the letter of credit and the private company.
These don't become fallback on an obligation of the county or the state or anybody.
That's correct. Not only is there an independent payment source, but in addition, papered throughout in large bold letters are these are non-recourse obligations of the state or the county, no liability, can't look, no tax funds are pledged, no other resources of the state or the county are pledged to pay these bonds.
Yes. In addition to the letter of credit in these transactions, there is a second layer of protection, which is a guarantee by the parent corporation, Waste Management, which is one of the world's largest corporations, so that there's an additional financial check.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm still having some difficulty with the question that Representative Hass actually asked about where the public good is in this. It's probably because I don't understand your industry well enough. So I'm asking some questions, and I'm hoping I don't embarrass myself or others here. I assume that, which was nothing new, of course, so let's move on. Yeah. You, it's easy. But do you get contracts from counties or cities to manage their waste disposal? Do they help set rates for that?
Yes, they do, and these are they're either franchises or contracts, which are negotiated on a repeated basis. So any time that the company can reduce their operating or transaction costs, that this would translate into better rates. And they're often in these programs working directly with the county that issues the franchise or the waste disposal contract.
So, and the other part would be the more efficient recycling efforts.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Follow-up?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing then is that there is oversight from government agencies on your fees and costs, and they take into account how possibly you're raising your capital for your company. Is that correct?
Raising capital? I'm sorry.
Well, essentially, you're raising capital through a bond issue here, and you use that. I mean, if you were competing with five other companies directly to the consumer and there was no government agencies involved, I'd have a hard time saying this company gets low-cost bonds from the state government by a conduit pass-through, and these other four companies don't. They have an unfair competitive advantage. But in fact, what I'm hearing you say is we're working under contracts with government agencies. They're overseeing what our costs are. They're taking into account those costs, and if we can get our capital lower, they're going to ask us to lower our rates. So there is a value to the consumer.
Yes, that's correct.
Is that correct?
That is correct. And again, this bill doesn't necessarily give solid waste disposal a leg up in the competition to receive the volume cap. They are simply allowed to compete for those volume cap funds on the same footing with other good activities.
I think that's very important that we do not have any advantage under this bill. It just allows us to, in certain areas, come in and basically make application for the dollars. And if you've got some tremendous programs out there and not enough money, we would anticipate if ours isn't as good, we're not going to receive that particular bond issuance.
Representative Witches, before I recognize you, I've got a meeting in the governor's office at 2, so I'm going to be on my way here. I'll leave it under the committee under the able control of Representative Kefouri. And if I get done in time, I'll be back. Otherwise, go ahead and finish off the meeting. And Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does this bill provide any competitive advantage to waste management that other potential competitors would not have?
No, it does not. Simply expressly allows solid waste disposal activities as an authorized activity to apply for these conduit revenue bonds. Any other waste management disposal company is on the same footing in applying for these financings.
So under this bill, any company that participates in these activities that wants to make these investments and raise money through this bond mechanism would have an equal opportunity to do that.
That's correct.
I talked to council about specifically adding waste management, but they said we could not do that.
Any further questions? Okay.
Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you.
Next we have Mark Houston.
Make it apply for the funds.
Yes, apply for the funds.
Make a difference in the application.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mark Houston. I manage business finance for the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department, and I'm here to testify on House Bill 3187. I'm here to provide technical advice on this bill and give you some background on the department's activities regarding solid waste projects. The Oregon Economic and Community Development Commission has the authority to issue industrial development bonds under ORS 285. Under this authority, the commission has delegated the individual project approvals to its finance committee. The focus of the industrial development bond program has been on economic development, specifically manufacturing and processing activities. Under that focus, the Finance Committee has approved solid waste projects, but only those that involve recycling or manufacturing as an integral part of the proposal. The committee has prioritized small issue manufacturing projects as its highest priority, leaving solid waste facilities to the end of the year to compete for any leftover bond issuance authority. We anticipate the Finance Committee would continue this prioritization pattern. Under the federal law that governs industrial development bonds, each state has allocated a volume cap for private activity bonds. This cap has recently been increased from $50 per capita to $75 per capita by the federal government. The legislature reallocates this federal allocation to individual state issuing agencies and to the Private Activity Bond Committee, allowing the commission to expand its bond authority to include all types of solid waste projects will likely put more pressure on the demand for that limited resource, especially at the Private Activity Bond Committee level. House Bill 3187 would expand the authority of the Commission to sponsor solid waste projects, in particular landfills, trucking activities, and transfer stations. This legislation would exempt these types of projects from the findings the Finance Committee is required to make, specifically that an eligible company both trade in international markets and from a cost-effectiveness test, and from public contracting statutes. From a technical perspective, we believe these amendments will allow the Finance Committee and the Commission to issue bonds for all types of solid waste projects and allow the Commission to lease these projects. I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee may have or give more background on industrial development bonds. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not clear as to where you are on this bill. Are you neutral on this bill?
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, Representative Witt, we are neutral. This is not in the governor's budget.
Do you perceive a particular fiscal impact on this in terms of costs for the agency?
Madam Chair, Representative Witt, no, we do not.
So the fact that it's not in the governor's budget wouldn't have to appear in the governor's budget. There's no fiscal impact, right?
Madam Chair, Representative, I guess I misspoke. It's not necessarily in the budget. It's not a governor's proposal. I should make it more clear than that. This is not something the governor or an agency has proposed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you have any concerns that this bill, the way it's proposed with this amendment, anyway, is an inappropriate or improper use of this bonding authority, or do you believe in any way that it would in any way interfere with fair and free competition in the marketplace?
Madam Chair, Representative Witt, the answer to your first question, we don't see any inappropriateness, definitely. To some extent, there are some prioritization issues and much of that prioritization occurs at the administrative level by the Economic Development Commission and the Private Activity Bond Committee, and that is part of their work. And your second question was, do you see anything in this legislation that would create any kind of an inappropriate benefit for one company over another or in any way interfere with the competitive market relative to waste collection and disposal? Madam Chair, Representative, but I will say that in my experience, no, to that question. But I will temper that somewhat. This is an area that we have not had a lot of experience in as an economic development agency, and that is one of the areas that most of our work, bulk of our work, especially on doing industrial development bonds and the economic development side of the agency, has been working with manufacturing companies, processing companies directly. This is an area we do not have substantial expertise in, so I can't answer that specifically, but in a general sense, I would say that all companies that qualify and as a class of companies, they could avail themselves of this tax-exempt financing within Oregon. So to the extent that that is generally available, I would see it being a level playing field.
Other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Ross Cornelius.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ross Cornelius. I'm currently the Deputy Director of Housing for the Portland Development Commission and actually acting in an interim role in addition at this point. For about 4 years before that, I was a member of the staff in the Housing and Community Services Department here in Salem. And before that, I was a member of a large corporation, Boise Cascade Corporation. So I've got a little understanding of how the private and public markets financing works. We're a little concerned about this bill. We have, in the testimony I provided you, indicated the dependency that we have on private activity bonds to accomplish our housing mission in the city of Portland. And the speaker beforehand did mention that you would hear from us, and I guess I qualify myself as a housing advocate. I never thought that that's where I was, but I guess I am. Private activity bonds are a source of funding that we use in a very efficient way to try to get housing built for a lot of different uses. In many cases, the housing that we're able to build with private activity bonds, married with whatever financing we can bring and whatever financing we're able to bring from the state and other sources, meets a lot of needs. We do an awful lot of worker housing. We do special needs housing. We do housing that has mixed uses, which includes commercial activities as well as residential. And we do mixed income housing, which includes moderate income as well as very low income housing. And we're finding that the activities that go on with the market do not encompass the kind of activities that we need to support to get housing built. The market has a rate of return that's required, and that rate of return puts them in a much higher income category than we are. So we're essentially doing things that the market does not do, using private activity bonds and other resources to do that. And we have a tremendous need throughout the state as well as in the metro area to do that. Over the last, I think, 5 years, we've produced about 1,000 units of affordable housing in the Portland area. And I'm aware that Washington County and others have issued bonds using private activity cap to get housing built in those areas. In listening to the testimony, I appreciate the effort and the initiative on the part of the folks bringing forward the bill to try to figure out how to access funding sources without impeding other people's access to the cap. And I think that's where they were going with the lease idea. It's not clear whether that's something that the state wants to get into, whether they want to get into leasing business. And as I understand it, that means basically the state buys it, buys the rolling stock and then leases it back to the company, and therefore they don't have to compete for private activity bond cap. that may or may not be the way it all works out. I know on the deals that we put together, they're very, very tight. And we do everything we can to leverage every other piece of financing that's out there. And without the lower interest rate that comes from the private activity bonds, the deals that we do would not go through. We could not do the program. We could not build them. We are cutting these things as tight as we possibly can. We're holding back developer fees. We're holding back costs and trying to really kind of shoelace something together that works. And we're able to do that because we bring a lot of other funding sources in. One of the concerns is that, as I understand it, and I've kind of been watching this bill, and it's gone through a couple different changes as we've gone along here, but to add the waste, solid waste management facilities in as an eligible use, I think allows the company to go over to economic and community development and try to access CAP there. And if they're not successful at doing that, then we anticipate that they would come back and try to access CAP with the Private Activity Bond Committee. Just last year, according to our research, we were oversubscribed by about $27 million of what was available to local issuers. I remember back when I was working here in Salem, there was a time when we were oversubscribed about $180 million of requests and about $45 million of private activity issuance capability. So there are a lot of people looking for this resource, and I think if you add another eligible activity to that, it could add to the pie that or add to the demand of a very limited resource, and we're concerned about that. I also noted I was listening to the folks go through the bill, and I was kind of concerned because it sounded like there was a lot of exemptions, and so much of what we do is to try to maintain a competitive and a level playing field. And in the work that we do, you know, folks come in and they compete, and we give everyone a fair shot at it, and we try to have a process that's fully understood, and everybody competes with the best project they can. And it sounded like some of the exemptions that were being put forward would maybe not create as fair a playing field in that regard. I guess I would also ask whether or not alternative funding sources have been explored or should be maybe explored if, in fact, there is a need for accessing capital on the part of the company. Certainly appreciate that, and it is a very competitive environment out there, and every company ought to be trying to reduce the cost of their money if they can. I'm just wondering whether private activity bonds and tax-exempt financing is the best way to do that, if there might be other sources of financing available. And I know that in my past experience, there's an awful lot of need throughout the state for help from the state, if they can get it, for smaller companies that are more trade-related, that are producing products that are sold throughout the country, throughout the nation, throughout the world, and they're having a tough time too. And so the pie that we've got able to split here isn't big enough for everybody. We certainly are supportive of those efforts to try to encourage the rural companies to be successful, but I'm wondering whether this would add sort of another mouth at the table, if you will, to a limited resource to help those other rural activities. I guess that's all I've got to say.
I'm not even going to look. Representative Witt, do you have a
question?
No. I do have a couple of questions for Mr. Cornelius. First of all, you said there are provisions in this bill that you believe take away from a level playing field. Can you be specific as to which provisions?
When I was reading through it, it looked to me like, and I've just gotten a copy of the bill as I sat down here today, but in Section 4 it says the commission is not required to make determination and findings if the economic development project involves a solid waste disposal facility and related vehicles, rolling stock, or equipment. So I'm not sure what that means, but it sounded to me like they were exempt from some other considerations that other competing needs for the bond cap may be subject to. And then I heard something about an exemption from competitive bidding requirements, which, again, I'm not familiar with, but it sounded like, gee, why are we exempting one outfit from that and not everybody?
Yeah, I would just point out, Madam Chair, to the committee, Mr. Cornelius, that the provisions in Section 4 in ORS 285A 055, there are six specific findings that have to be made. I think the proponents would tell you that the first two findings, which are the only two that they're exempted from, are ones that just don't apply in this given situation. Because it says goods or services which are sold in markets which are national or international competition exists. I mean, this doesn't apply. They are required to make the other four findings that are specifically placed in statute here. And it would seem to me on Chapter 279, the competitive bidding requirement, I think the testimony was, since they're a private company, they shouldn't be held to the standards of public contracting. That seems to make sense to me. I don't see this as an unlevel playing field as it relates to those provisions. If I can follow up with another question, though, Madam Chair. This issue over the competition for these funds, for bonds, I wonder if we could get a response from the waste management people specifically to that, because I think that's something the committee would be concerned about, that this, in essence, could crowd out, if you will, funding for low-income housing, for example. And I think that's what Mr. Cornelius is expressing a concern about. And maybe we could ask him specifically to respond to that.
Should I talk from property fine first? Or anything?
Well, I think that issue is very germane to the committee.
Okay.
If that'd be okay, Madam Chair, maybe Mr. Dewey or whoever could respond to that.
Are there any further questions for Mr. Cornelius?
Just one comment, Madam Chair, Representative Witt. If the exemption, and I hear your point about the exemptions and how they apply, I guess my question would be whether they apply to every other company that would come in as well. In other words, if a small mill in Lapine or somewhere came in, would they also be exempted from having to do the competitive bid process?
Well, if I can, Madam Chair, I mean, under Section 4, Paragraph 2, it says the commission is not required to make these findings if the development project includes solid waste disposal facility and related vehicles, rolling stock, or equipment. So anybody who's in the who provides those kinds of services would be exempt from right. those specific requirements.
Mr. Dewey?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Mike Dewey, Waste Management. Let me make a couple comments. First of all, with regard to Portland Housing, in terms of they can access the private activity bond fund as we could access that fund also. As you heard from Mr. Houston, they do have a prioritization of the dollars and how they allocate the dollars. And waste programs usually come last at the end of the year, and if there's not any money, then there's not any money. I think, and I'll put words in Mr. Repine's mouth, when we had a conversation, they have a different allocation. They have their own cap. And they were somewhat concerned that if we were not successful on the private side with economic development, we might want to have the cap raised and have theirs lowered. We don't think we could ever win that political battle, but nonetheless, that is something that might be raised. Let me say, though, if there is a concern about that, that somehow housing is going to be squeezed out, and we are all for housing, there's no question about that, and affordable housing. And if that's a concern that the committee has, and if it's necessary to move the bill forward, the lease back arrangement is very important. I just don't think he really understands how it works in the sense that the state would hold title to it, but they don't purchase the vehicles. They don't bring them to the landfill or to the facilities. It is literally paperless. And the state is protected through the various provisions under the federal law. And obviously, the state would want to protect themselves. So the leaseback arrangement is important. And again, that doesn't impact the cap. So we don't have to worry about somebody being not getting an allocation of dollars. And the other portion that is important that I think is very non-controversial here is the counties coming together as one entity, which is cost efficient. And I think Representative Witt did a good job of explaining the two exemptions. We think they make a whole lot of sense because they just don't apply. But if you have a concern about the housing allocation and they're going to somehow get left out, we need to obviously start moving this bill forward because it is a House bill. And so if you have angst over that, we're willing to take those provisions out.
Yes. Tell me what types of things then would be within the volume cap, and you're saying the lease payments are, I remember hearing that earlier from Bond Council, right, that that's outside the volume cap. Could you give me a sense of the types of activities? And the second part of my question is, do you have any sense of the dollar scope that you'd be going after? You might have mentioned this, and I might have missed it, but how much in bonds are we looking at?
Well, I'm going to have Doug come up because I want to make sure I answer this. He's the expert here. Mm-hmm. We are still eligible for certain kinds of projects under the current criteria in the Private Bond Activity Fund. So we're already eligible, but usually what occurs is if they've used all their cap early in the year, we're going to have to wait until see what happens at the end of the year. And sometimes a couple years ago there was a project that went forward. I have no idea what kind of dollars we're looking for. But by virtue of just having the lease back in the statute and the opportunities for the counties to come together, we haven't changed anything on the volume cap. We would compete with projects where we could compete today.
So are you telling me, I'm confused because I thought I heard you say that the lease part would not affect the volume cap.
It does not affect the volume.
Okay, so
volume.
How is it? You would compete within the volume cap for the lease. Maybe, Mr. Goh, if you could.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, this is a confusing area. In terms of, you are correct, that with respect to those portions that are leased, or put another way, that the state has tax ownership, those are exempt from the volume cap, no question. With respect to projects, for example, landfills, that I don't think the state would want to own because of liability issues and that sort of thing. Those would be privately owned. There would not be any federal ownership. So those would be subject to the volume cap. So anything, any project that the waste management company, whoever that might be, has ownership of, those would be subject to the volume cap. If it was, if I may just use a couple examples. If it was a county project and the project was not governmentally owned, the process would be the waste company would have to go to the private activity bond committee and compete with all other users or all other issuers, local government issuers, including Portland Development Commission, and compete for that volume cap in front of the private activity bond committee. In the case, if the State Economic and Community Development Commission was issuing the bonds, I think what Mr. Houston's testimony indicates is that since they already receive a private activity bond allocation from the legislature each biennium, that they would reserve at the beginning of the year that volume cap for manufacturing companies like they always have. And if there is any remaining volume cap at the end of the year, then qualifying solid waste disposal facilities, which could include waste management, they would then consider giving a portion of their volume cap to those bonds and allowing bonds to be issued for that project. As Mr. Cornelius pointed out, there certainly would be the opportunity if Economic Development Commission cap was not available that an application could be made to the Private Activity Bond Committee to get additional allocation. But again, those would be only for projects that there is not governmental ownership, so not the lease projects. I hope I've been responsive. I'll be happy to.
That's helpful. You mentioned a landfill might be an example.
Yes.
Within the cap. How much is a landfill worth in round dollars?
I'm not the landfill expert, but I will, last year, another given example, waste management did substantial improvements to its two landfills in Gillum County, and I think that totaled around $17 million is my recollection. So there,
that's the scope of it.
Right, and that landfill, for example, basically, again, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, takes all of Portland's garbage. So it's a very substantial landfill.
What I'm saying, Madam Chair, with regard to the concern that you might have over housing and the impact on the volume cap, that we could recommend that we keep the status quo as it relates to the activities that we are currently in with regards to the bond funds. But we do need the lease arrangement, and we think it is smart to have the counties where they want to come together and have one county be an issuer of projects as opposed to numerous counties, because we just don't think that's very cost efficient for economic development or just the projects in general. It's economies of scale. Because I know this is a very complex and confusing issue, and I'm glad we brought it to you. But we think it is, in terms of the California program has worked well on the leaseback side of the equation.
Let's hear from
technically, then, what you're talking about would be deleting Section 1 from the bill.
Section what?
Section 1.
Well, actually, there would be some other, and Mr. Goh and I would have to talk about that, but there would be some other changes, because Section 1 of the bill, which I don't have in front of me, is arguably you don't need, but we'd like to keep it in there because the Attorney General believes that solid waste management includes those activities. But we thought it was appropriate to solid waste management programs are in the program today. we were asking that some other programs come into the program, and we would not have, we would delete those from the bill. And that would not be difficult to do with council.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
From Mr. Reapen, who's waited so patiently back there. Moving forward, each witness.
Well, make sure he doesn't pull it out.
We're expecting you to clarify this.
Oh, absolutely. No, Chair. You know, this time in the afternoon, this is easy to clarify. For the record, I am Bob Repine, Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services. Just kidding on the clearing upside. Actually, I'd be here with my bond counsel, but he was already grabbed up by the other side, so Mr. Goh couldn't represent me today. So I'm here all by myself, so I hope he's feeling really bad back there.
Is he?
They pay more.
I guess my issue with the bill, Madam Chair and committee members, it is more of the philosophical question of what do we want to do and how do we want to get there relative to this very valuable commodity that the state gets, like other states. As you heard from the proponents, the amount has, I think you heard, maybe you didn't, but the amount has moved from $50 per person per population to $70 because of 8 years of hard-pressing leaning on the congressional members to get this increase to happen since 1986. And people in the housing industry and the economic community development companies around the state have been probably the more aggressive in trying to get this opportunity to increase this volume cap that we now have. So we do have more resources than we had in the past. That's a good thing. However, it basically brings us current to what inflation had been lost over the flat funding since the last movement in 1986. And so we really are probably at a baseline of where we should be anyhow. Just to give you an idea, the amount the state of Oregon gets currently is somewhere in the $200 to $20 million range. It'll get up to $300 million on an annual contribution through this fund. My department alone can spend the entire state's allocation. I'll say that again. My department alone does and can spend the entire state's allocation of the volume cap. We don't get the entire state volume allocation. We get a proportion of it. But we do enough business and other creative funding processes that we have done historically that gets us up to the equivalent of the entire state volume cap. A lot of that has been allowed because of the inactivity within the veterans program. But now that has changed because of a measure that was just passed by the voters, which effectively will get the veterans program back up and running. So they will no longer be selling their volume cap to me, of which I was the only other entity in the state of Oregon who could buy that. And so that will take near $90 million of volume cap out of my pipeline. So what happens, we'll live within the parameters of what we get. But the question is, there are other demands that we've talked about, or this building has talked about for years, and this is one of those very scarce resources that housing becomes a benefactor in relative to making affordable housing. It's limited, it's cherished, and it doesn't, you know, not everybody can kind of have everything they want. And so my concern is, as Mr. Dewey said, and he articulated, and I agree, is, you know, what happens when we start down this road, and if that road becomes, the demand on this road is greater, do we start making more requests? And I think the other issue is, you would ask yourself, based on the exceptions that are being asked, who next would be coming down this road also? And I mean, I'm sure there are just as many reasonable, justifiable requests as similar to this that could be just as tempting or interesting to have those exceptions be made for the resources that are available through economic community development. So I'm selfish, and I'll admit that up front. It's a selfish issue because we know this is a scarce commodity, and we cherish it for every dime and dollar we get of it. I think the other issue is that I think Mr. Dewey's compromise language, and I'd like to see that as it comes out, but I think it's a good faith effort to try to, you know, set aside the part that really has an effect on the volume cap and what doesn't, and then themselves would still be subject to the normal competitiveness of the process that's available. The only issue that I would still ask the committee to consider is I don't have a clear understanding of solid waste disposal facilities. I'm assuming that means landfills, and so that was the issue Mr. Dewey talked about. Related vehicles, I think I know what that means, rolling stock and equipment, but we also, at one time, there has been some discussion about transfer stations, which is part of the
the continuum of disposal today. We don't have landfills everywhere. We have transfer stations that have been built, so volumes of debris can be caught together and trucked to somebody else's backyard or some other problem. So I don't know whether or not that is part of the description of landfills being in the cap or being part of some other definitional part that would cause it to be outside of the cap. So I think we need some clarification there. But again, the need is real for the housing component, and as Mr. Cornelius talked about, it's a resource that we look at for a lot of opportunities to improve housing in the state of Oregon, and so we feel it's important that we stake make our statements be known to the committee.
Any questions?
Chair.
Yeah.
You heard the committee's discussion with or Mr. Dewey's offer to limit the scope of the legislation. Not being a very sophisticated guy, I'm not sure what that means.
Remember, I was a contractor representative back before I was.
No, I'm sorry, not me.
I'm not very sophisticated.
Does that help? Still the same problem, but dramatically less. I mean, is there a different scope?
Madam Chairman, Representative Beck, I don't know because I'm like many of the members have stated, I'm not certified smart in this industry dealing with transfer of waste. So I don't know if a truck is one truck at an amount versus 100 fleets of trucks, which is proportionally 100 times the cost. So I don't know how big is big in this instance. And I have no idea. I think the Mr. Goh indicated what the remodeling costs and upkeep costs for the Gillum property was at $14 million, and that was a relatively large amount of what could have been inside the volume cap, possibly. So I don't know what trucks go today. I know what I drive, and it isn't a trash truck, so, well, could be. But the reality is I don't know how big that is. But I think that's a reasonable discussion, and it would be a worthwhile discussion to follow through with Mr. Dewey to find out if we can kind of pave our way or walk our way through that path to find if there's a reasonableness to that request.
Mr. Dewey.
No, I thought he was standing.
You've been summoned to the front.
Here, let me get that chair for you. And my former bond attorney, son.
Mr. Epine raised a question. Maybe he can ask you a question.
Where'd you get that? No. I was just, again, my comment, Madam Chair, was to Mr. Dewey's request to consider the redefining what would be part of the lease opportunity, to what would be taken out. I think it would be, I would like to see how it is and then kind of get a chance to step back from it and see what it means in resources, but I don't have an idea how much the lease component would be either, so he's probably more certified smart in that aspect of it than I am.
I'm not sure I understand your question, though.
How much does a dump truck cost? Or the ones that you're planning on buying? Or what I guess, the part that you would have outside of this, the lease component, that you're going to take the lease piece out, right?
No, the lease piece has to stay in because that...
But it's not part of the volume cap.
Right, it's not part of the volume cap.
Okay, then sorting that out, if the other pieces are in there, how much? What is the demand that would be left after the lease pieces are out for both landfill and or other equipment and or transfer stations? Do we know that?
Madam Chair, that is really speculative, and we don't know that. We can use apply, again, and this is maybe the confusing part, we can apply for bonding through the program today. And clearly we can do that, and we have done that in the past. And so we don't want to preclude those opportunities. All we're saying is that we would keep one status quo in terms of what we can do today with regards to the kind of programs that the private activity bund fund funds today. And then keep the county provision that is non-controversial. We're just trying to figure out a way to make sure we do that and keep the lease back arrangement in there. Am I making sense?
Thanks. For the moment.
Yeah. Question?
Is your proposal, Mike, of just dealing with the lease piece, does that affect the, if that seems to be outside this volume cap? Thanks, Dick.
Yes, I think...
Would that affect then anybody else taking advantage of this program?
Representative Kefouri and Representative Beck, if there is $280 million available per year,
mm-hmm.
and everybody's concerned about who gets what
right.
portion of that, and that's what he's concerned about, is somehow somebody else is going to come in and
right.
take some of their dollars. Well, the leaseback arrangement, in terms of how it works, we don't even deal with those kind of, we don't deal with that. It's outside of that. So he should not have a concern as to the passage of that because it doesn't impact that 280.
A different program.
It's a different program. So if it was a $20 million bond issuance, it wouldn't lower the limit by $20 million. Is that correct? Okay. So the housing advocates, and they're good people, should be allayed, their fears should be allayed with regard to that. We're just trying to, Representative Carlson asked if we could figure out how to get to the status quo, but keep the lease back arrangement in and the county arrangement in. And we were just sitting down trying to figure out how to do that.
And Mr. Dew, how close are you having some...
How close are we, Doug?
maybe 5 minutes away.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Question?
Well, couldn't we get a commitment here from the proponents of this bill as to what specifically they would do in the Senate and move the bill along and let them do it here? And I mean, it's I'm sure they'll follow through on the commitments they make here rather than getting the bill held up here in committee.
Yeah, we, if I may, Madam Chair, we would pledge to keep the status quo as it relates to the bonding program today and deal with the in a bill that would come back would have the leaseback arrangement in it and the county arrangement. But I think that would be advisable. Just we don't want to do something unintended here, but we would appreciate it moving on, and I think those would understand that this is something we can work out.
Madam Chair, the understanding would be, Mike, that if these specific things weren't addressed in the Senate, of course, we would not concur.
I would expect you not to concur.
Right.
If you did, I would be surprised.
Are there any questions for...
Are you okay with that?
Madam Chair, just a comment on the concurrence issue. If the Senate, did not modify anything, there is no chance to concur.
Madam Chair, Mr. Repine's right, but you know, I mean, I'm.
Oh, actually, I was just thinking.
I mean, the way this process works, of course, since down here in the legislature's on trust, and Mr. Dewey's making a commitment here, and I'm sure that commitment will be honored.
I want to come back next year, maybe.
That worked for me on my bill.
Yeah, I would feel more comfortable seeing what you're proposing before I move the bill. So if you could take a stab at it and get back
sure.
to us.
Sure. We can.
5 minutes. See you in five.
Yeah. Thank you. Any other questions?
There was not one other witness. I think it was.
Cheers. Yeah. Close the hearing on House Bill 3187 and open a hearing on House Bill 3405. You're here. Welcome.
You may recall the bill deals with penalty provisions on declassification of farm forest land, and in particular with the case where a conservation easement is allowed on the land, and the original bill involved essentially continuing the deferral of those back taxes if the conservation easement is allowed and if it continues on the property. You have the dash three amendments. Before you, and these are from Representative Devlin's office. Sort of a, I think they're also
they're mine.
Exactly,
yeah, right.
The same as Representative Beck's, and intended basically to move the bill on, and that there are other issues that still need to be resolved, but that they'll be resolved later on the other side.
If I can take a stab. The Representative Devlin's bill had the provisions that Dick talked about, and I was going to add on some amendments that are a bill we passed last session involving how assessments, or we passed in the House. It didn't make it to the Senate in time to have action taken. And this is a bill that relates to landowners getting a commitment from the counties as to how their property would be assessed if they put a conservation easement on their property, and has provisions for landowners reimbursing the county for any costs associated with doing that. So, and this was something we were going to add to Representative Devlin's bill, but since his provisions aren't worked out yet, they said, why don't you add your non-controversial piece? I think all the parties are okay with this, and get it over to the Senate with something that, so far, this piece, I think, has people are signed off on, and then if they can get the rest of the components together on the timberland element, then we'll add that in the Senate if there's time.
So the draft, as it's before you, replaces the
bill. Yeah, this replaces the bill, and again, this is a bill this committee passed last, this is language this committee passed last session.
We have one witness to testify, John Phillips.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. John Phillips for the Department of Revenue. We are tracking the bill that Representative Devlin is advancing, but this is the first I've seen of these amendments, so I was just concerned, and maybe just for the record, I can work with it on the Senate side if you want to pass it, that's fine. But I'm just concerned about how it dovetails into the special assessment programs for all the rest of the property tax system. So not having had more time to look at it, I just wanted to get that on the record, and then I'd be happy to work with it as it moves.
Yeah. I don't think this is involved with special assessment at all.
No.
These particular provisions strictly have to do with how your property will be appraised by the county if you place a conservation easement on your property. One impediment to some landowners placing an easement on their property, they don't know, the county won't tell them what the assessment will be until after they've placed the easement. And this will allow landowners to get a commitment from the county as to what the assessment would be before they actually place the deed restriction on the property. It allows the landowners to conduct an appraisal and pay the county to review it and presumably approve it or revise it, but at least get a commitment from the local taxing authority as to what their property tax or what their assessed value and thus their assessment would be. So it's really kind of an information, giving landowners information about how their property is going to be treated if they take action.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll read it again. I just saw some language I wasn't.
Or come chat with me about it.
Okay.
That's the.
Thank you.
That's what I think it does.
Representative White.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To Representative Beck.
Mm-hmm.
So all we're doing here is we're trying to give property owners some knowledge in advance as to the likely change in property value if they're considering granting an easement.
That's correct.
To property. For conservation reason and highway scenic preservation easement.
It's under current law, yes. And under current law, some counties won't tell you. You have to actually place the restrictions and then take your chances on appeal of your property tax bill that that your property has gone down in value. Not every conservation easement necessarily reduces the value of your property.
So this would help these landowners, these property owners, have a better sense as to, you know, give them the information they need
to make
an
informed decision. That's right. Okay. There's a provision here that the landowners have to reimburse the county for any costs of doing this.
And if I can follow up, and Representative Devlin's satisfied that his part of this bill could be addressed over in the Senate, potentially.
He's hopeful. Like,
yeah,
they've got some details to work.
You've basically gotten stuff to tell.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, he's fine with that.
He is.
Yes, if I might, the one real language section that threw me was on line 5 on page 4, where it refers to the assessed value of property being determined according to that pre-assessment done by the assessor in the earlier section. So it's saying assessed value is something that was sort of predetermined, and then that can grow. I guess in my mind, when I think of assessed value, it's usually the lesser of maximum or real market, so I would have used the term real market there. But that might just be something Dexter can explain to me later on and work through that. But the policy seems like it should work. Thank you.
I can't respond to that.
Any other questions? Going to close the hearing on House.
Oh, we're in a hearing? Okay.
No. Close the hearing on House Bill 3405. Yeah. I'm going to hearing on some amendments to that. Now we're going to open a work session, House Bill 3405.
I'd move, Madam Chairman.
Yes.
Move the ask for amendments to House Bill 3405.
Representative Beck moves the dash three amendments to House Bill 3405. Any comments? Discussion? Objections? So they're in.
I would move House Bill 3405 as amended to the floor to pass recommendation.
Representative Beck moves House Bill 3405 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Call the roll.
Mr. Sumter Stone?
Aye.
Staff?
Aye.
Brown?
Aye.
Powell?
Aye.
Williams?
Aye.
Beth?
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Aye.
Lloyd?
Aye.
Jeff Salomon?
Aye.
House Bill 3405 as amended moves to the floor with due pass recommendation. And
Devlin.
Devlin.
His bill. Let him carry.
Oh,
his bill.
Representative Beck will carry his bill.
It'll surely die now.
Oh. Okay, open a public hearing on HJR 45. Okay, well, we will close the hearing on HJR 45 and open a work session on HJR 45.
Madam Chairman and committee members, with HJR 45, what this bill is doing is it amends the Oregon Constitution to allow a local taxing district to divide its district into tax zones and then establish a permanent tax rate for each tax zone if the majority of the voters in the taxing district approve the measure. Each tax zone then has a different tax rate, and this would go before voters in the next general election. So basically, we had testimony from Deschutes County about how they have a local option right now with two different rates, but they want to have a permanent rate. Different in the urban area versus rural area, so this would address that issue. And basically, with revenue impact, it's dependent on whether HJR 45 receives voter approval statewide. This tax rate limit is, again, part of Measure 50, and so it would be under the Measure 5 tax limit. Okay.
All right. Would
you
like to move the bill?
I have to move it.
Okay. Are there any discussions? Is there any discussion? Motion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Witt.
Yeah, I move, there are no amendments on the same thing.
All right.
I move House Joint Resolution 45 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Witt moves HJR 45 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair,
yes.
It's my I spoke to the chair of the committee on this earlier in the week. I guess I'm a little troubled. We're referring a property tax change out, not trying to accomplish some other modest changes to the property tax system. And we're just dealing with one little one, and I'm a little wishful that we could find a few other modest changes that affect our broken property tax system, not just a change that affects basically one county. So I guess I'd hoped we would try to, I don't know what those changes would be that would be modest in scale, but I don't know if there's a big constituency for this referral, and I don't see a crowd of people clamoring here, and I guess I'm a little concerned that referring something out to the voters that doesn't really have an advocate. I'm wondering if we ought to be trying to do some other, make some other changes and make this bill, give this bill a broader constituency before the people. It was just a comment.
Madam Chair.
Representative Witt.
I appreciate Representative Beck's concerns, and in fact, we had a referral last session. I think it was for Linn County, or maybe it was for Linn County and one of the counties.
It was the same county.
The same.
And the voters didn't understand it.
Right.
It was a necessary technical fix,
right,
because they got caught into a change relative to Measure 50, I think. And it was technical, it was narrow, and it was confusing to the voters, and it had a very limited impact. At the same time, if you start putting other things into this referral, you start creating all kinds of other opponents and other interests. And I think Deschutes County made a case here that they have a legitimate issue here that can only be dealt with constitutionally.
Right.
And it seems to me, rather than putting more things into it and making it more confusing or creating more opposition, I think if we believe as a committee that they have a legitimate concern here, we're better off just focusing on that issue and ask the voters to try to look at it logically and make a decision. So, I mean, I appreciate your position, Representative Beck, but I think for Deschutes County and for the representatives that, and there are folks that came over and testified on this, and there were quite a few of them, you know, I'm willing to support this and try to get this out in front of the voters to try to address something that they find that's important to their county that requires a constitutional change.
If I can, I guess all I'd ask is that if in the next, if this has legs in the Senate and if, between any committee members or anybody else in the building, we can come up with some modest changes to the property tax system, which would enhance the bill, and not looking for a fight before the voters, but I think this measure and some other changes would benefit by, this is going to be our only property tax referral. And if we can come up with something between now and whenever this comes to a hearing in the Senate, I would hope the committee and the chair would, if we can get support in the Senate committee, be helpful in advocating for some additional provisions.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Beck and I had this conversation on the floor the other day, and frankly, I was stumped. I mean, when it came to, well, you know, some other things in 50 we could fix, and I'm, at the moment, I didn't have in mind what else to tag on with 45 that... And also cognizant of Representative Witt's comments that everything we do to this probably just brings on a new array of opponents, or at least potentially, so we need to be careful. But I did suggest Representative Beck check with maybe the counties or special districts folks who live with this, or Department of Revenue. John Phillips is here. Are there some technical things within the scope of HJR 45 that we could at least look at for amendment? I'm sure willing to help advance that in the Senate if I think keeping in mind the risk that Representative Witt has pointed out, that the more we do, the greater the risks, but I'm sure open to it. I just don't have in my head the list of top five things that we should do to fix Measure 45 that we could do in a non-controversial slam dunk sort of way that I know Deschutes County and Linn County need.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not proposing this amendment, but I do recall when those people came over here from Deschutes County that all of them, were lamenting the double majority, supermajority, and I think a couple of them talked about, well, maybe that's what we should put on a statewide ballot.
out of bounds. except I would note, I think I saw in the paper, I made a mental note of a headline that said that Deschutes County had passed a sheriff's levy. So they did it. They got up over that double majority.
Oh, they got, well, they have to turn out then.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was just in the paper this morning.
Well, I would hope that, I seem to remember last session when we passed out the other referral to the voters, that one of the counties, and I don't know whether it was Lynn or Deschutes, ended up opposing the bill.
Mm-hmm.
I sure hope that if we pass this out as a blessing, that they're at least going to support it at the ballot box this time.
Or we won't do it again.
Or we won't do it again.
Yeah, it drags her out. You're out there listening to us.
That's right.
Okay, we're in a work session, right?
Has there been a motion?
Yeah, I move.
Mm-hmm. Any other further discussion? Clerk will call the roll. Excuse?
Staff.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Staff.
Aye.
Williams.
Excuse.
Whip.
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson.
Aye.
Safari.
Aye.
Chair Sherman.
Aye. And here's Representative Williams.
Both sides.
Really?
HCR 45 moves the floor to do pass recommendation. Who would like to carry this?
Knope. My home
community.
Right. So the work session on HCR 45. Okay, we are going to reopen. Wait, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 3187. Okay, Madam Chair, I have in my hand the in-the-hall meeting results of the group. So what they have come up with is to, on page 2 of the dash 2 amendments, should I just move this? I don't have to say it twice.
Madam Chair, are we in rule suspension?
Oh, no. Okay, let me first ask, Madam Chair, I would request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended for the purpose of conceptually amending House Bill 3187.
Dash blank amendment.
Dash 2 amendment.
Any objections?
Okay, Madam Chair, the conceptual amendment, there are two conceptual amendments. The first is on page 2, line 4, which we identified during the early part of the testimony, to remove the bolded language, but is not limited to, including the commas, so that it would simply encompass the additional language and not expand the focus. That's conceptual amendment number one. Conceptual amendment number two is after, on line 24, after the word equipment, they have added a comma, and it says, when the project does not require any private activity volume cap under ORS 286.605 to ORS 286.645. I'll read that again. Comma, when the project does not require any private activity volume cap under ORS 286.605 to 286.645. Period. All right, we have a motion before us. Is there any discussion? And Madam Chair, I'd be interested in making sure, hearing you would ask me the question whether the opponents feel like this particular amendment would address, or at least begin to address, the issues that they raised. Could we ask
Mr. Refine? Do you, does this seem to address your concern? Wonderful. Thank you. All right, do we have any further discussion? Any opposition? Is this what I do?
We need to restate them for the record, we're set. No one knows what we're doing.
Representative Carlson has moved two conceptual amendments to House Bill 3187-2 amendments. The first in line 4, removing but is not limited to and the commas on either side. The second amendment starts in line 24,
after the word equipment, changing that period to a comma and adding when the project does not require any private activity volume cap under ORS 286.605 to ORS 286.645. Any objections? So order.
Madam Chair.
President Carlson.
I would move House Bill 31.
Madam Chair, we need the dash 2 now amended into the bill.
Okay.
I would move the dash 2 amendment as conceptually amended.
Representative Carlson moves the dash 2 amendment as conceptually amended to House Bill 3187. Any discussion? Any objection?
Madam Chair.
Representative Carlson.
I would move House Bill 3187 as amended and conceptually amended to the floor with the due process recommendation.
Representative Carlson moves House Bill 3187 as amended and conceptually amended to the floor with the due process recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Yeah.
Aye.
Vice Chair.
Aye.
Before.
Aye.
Chair Shatterly.
Aye. Put a consent calendar.
Are you serious?
It looks like Representative Whitman.
I'll cure it.
All right.
I'd like me to.
Carry the bill. House Bill 3187, as amended and conceptually amended, moves the floor with the due process recommendation. Representative Whit will carry the bill. And I hope that if there are problems with this, we can continue to work this out other places. And with that, committee, close the work session on House Bill 3187. And since everybody's leaving, we're going to close the hearing.
Hey, Lane, are we-